we're back.
We wish you a merry heart soul.
We do, and a heart soul new year. you're back, I should say.
I'm back on the sofa in Somerset.
Somerset sofa.
Yes, so I have just literally a few hours ago handed in some of my final work from my big fancy London course. My brain is slightly melted.
For first timers, B has been away for a little bit. We've missed a couple of episodes because you've been in London writing all of the TV. So if there's any TV that you don't like for the next 3 or 4 months, it's artswellpodcast@gmail.com. It's her fault.
Not me. They won't let me do it properly yet. Okay. Welcome. Yeah. My name is Bea Roberts. I'm a script writer and a script doctor. With me, I have Mr. Luke Haynes.
I'm wearing a hat.
He is. Author, raconteur, bon vivant.
It's bloody freezing.
It's so cold.
That's why I'm wearing a hat, even in the house.
And Disco the podcast puppy is currently at daycare.
She is at dog daycare, so she's present. Well, she's not present or voting this time.
No, she's having a romp. As well, Luke.
Yeah, we felt we owed you guys because we haven't been around for a little bit. So we have just bitten the bullet, and we are going to be talking about Lindsay Lohan's new Netflix movie, Falling for Christmas.
Oh,
doesn't that just warm the cockles of your bile duct? If you're me. It's God.
I have got a very peculiar relationship to this this lot of Christmas films. Mm. So I feel like you're either in this club or you're not.
Yeah.
There is a whole genre of Christmas romantic comedies that are very low budget, that are extremely formulaic. I believe they were started by Hallmark on the Hallmark Channel, and then took off, and they've now become this phenomenon. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, hop over to Channel 5 and have a look at their Christmas
section.
And just
put it on. It'll be on. It's December. It'll either be the World's Strongest Man or one of these.
You'll see a sort of harrowing array of titles that are all almost the exact same film, with very slight twists.
A Christmas Bauble, A Tree for Christmas.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Dean Cain. This dog can talk now.
Yeah. So we're going to end the dirty
That's a
little
callback
secret,
joke, by the way,
that I'm harbouring is that I have written.
You're responsible for at least one of them.
Not a Christmas one, but I have written one of these very low budget factory rom-coms, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about it. And so this Lindsay Lohan is just one of them. Now, Netflix have got really good pedigree with these because they've got the Christmas Prince trilogy of films, which includes a film about a cursed baby.
Yeah, I think your metric for a good pedigree of mine might be differing slightly on the...
And also, the fantastic Vanessa Hudgens vehicles, a Knight for Christmas, about a medieval knight who gets transported back to the current day.
And doesn't immediately just have a screaming aneurysm the first time he sees a bicycle, which is...
And also, The Princess Switch, Princess Switch 2, The Princess Switch 3.
Yeah.
So Netflix have got their kind of own subgenre where they normally put in some sort of former Disney star, now in their 30s, as the heroine. And Lindsay Lohan is the latest one of these.
I think she's slightly older than us, so she's probably about 40 by now. But it's been a hard 30-odd years.
Right. I'm not going to say a rough... Well, she has had a rough time. She's had a wealthy but rough time.
Yes, and boy, does it show. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let me slog through the plot of Falling for Christmas. And I don't want to insult the listener's intelligence by thinking that you think this is going to be any good. It's not. Let's just all put our cards on the table.
I don't think we watch them because they're good. So I quite like these movies. I think we watch them because they're weirdly kitsch and formulaically comforting.
I do this with terrible horror and action films, and you ask why I do it and describe it as artistic self-harm.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I hate this Christmas romance shit, but you do it too. We all do it.
We all do it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Lindsay Lohan is a rich heiress whose father wants her to take a...
Overboard.
This film is basically just Overboard. Go back and listen to our Overboard episode. Lindsay Lohan is a rich heiress whose father wants her to take a bullshit job in one of his swanky hotels. But she wants to make her own mark on the world, but she's also too spoiled. And her boyfriend is a famous influencer, and I hate everything about this.
Yep.
She's like, if you want me to empathise with characters, don't make them a rich heiress who's incredibly spoiled and an influencer. I don't care already. We're 30 seconds in. Lohan's father is approached by a local pauper who owns a nearby cheap ski resort. Yeah, he owns the down market ski resort.
Riffraff, how can you even understand what he's saying?
Right, squire, I got my own ski resort. It's not actually what he says, but it should be. This peasant wants Mr. I put Beaumont here, as in Belmont, I think. It doesn't matter.
Belmont.
This peasant wants Mr. Belmont to invest in his failing ski resort, but he gets rebuffed. And on his way out, he spills coffee on Lohan.
Hey! Yay! Ding, 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 ding.
Spilling coffee on somebody in a rom-com. Also, if you remember our Christmas bingo from last year, this is not coffee in the cups. It's a very egregious example of that's not coffee, which was a bingo point for us. He gets thrown out of the hotel for this. His name is Jake, and Jake's absolute slum of a ski resort has a barely functional snowmobile, like it's the Middle Ages.
Oh, God, so poor.
And is home to his adorable mixed-race child and her wise Mexican grandmother, which is also ticking off points left and right in these films. My next note is I might actually hate this more. It's a toss-up between that and the influencer and the, yeah, just awful, saccharine, sugary, wise grandma, adorable moppet situation that we're in.
You, listener, you could write this film. You have seen this film.
Yeah.
You know every beat that's going to happen pretty much, probably in order. So we did, I did our Christmas bingo play along.
Yeah.
With this, which we will include in the description. It's a great game you can play. There are 20,
it's free.
There are 27 bingo squares and this film filled 15.
Wow, yeah. So Mr. Belmont hates Lohan's influencer boyfriend and they talk about her dead mum whilst looking at a snow globe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, you're getting points all over.
Trope.
Lohan and Boyf go to take Insta shots on a mountain and on the way he turns off her Christmas music because he's selfish and they're not really well suited.
Do you mean the man that she's with at the beginning of the movie?
It turns out he's not her true love. No. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Well, I can't
spoilers,
imagine
people.
She's going to end up with the only other eligible man in this film because they seem like opposites.
He already spilled coffee on her. How will she ever forgive him?
They're never going to recover from that.
Yeah. Lohan and her boyfriend go off-piste and get lost, and the boyfriend, Tad, proposes. Meanwhile, wise grandma and child put a wish on a tree, and an actual literal Santa who runs a hot dog stand uses his sexually threatening Santa powers to make Lindsay Lohan fall off a mountain. Yes, that's a sentence that I had to write, and I can't believe it either. That's actually what happens. There's a creepy, leery Santa who, for some reason, at Christmas is running a hot dog stall instead of, you know, delivering presents, and he makes magic happen so that Lindsay Lohan falls off the mountain that she's taking an Instagram selfie on with her boyfriend.
The line between Santa being like heartwarmingly lovely that you want to give them a cuddle and so creepy that you don't ever want to even be in a lift with them is very fine.
Yeah,
it's very fine.
Yeah, it's a swing and a miss on this
one. This one is quite far along the other end of the spectrum.
My note just says I can't believe I just wrote that either and I'm just transcribing it.
Like if I saw him walk in, I'd get my keys out my pocket.
Yeah. So Lohan and her boyfriend fall off opposite sides of the mountain and land apart from each other. But both miraculously alive and absolutely
completely
fine.
Completely fine.
Yeah. Jake is out with a tour of some people from his failing ski resort and comes across Lindsay Lohan's unconscious body. Tad falls off the other side of the cliff and to an unknown fate, and Lohan now has amnesia. My next note just says we're overboarding now. So if you've seen the movie Overboard in either of its incarnations, this is exactly what we're doing, but Christmas Overboard. She wakes up, she can't remember who she is, she doesn't know she's a rich heiress.
I would like it noted that I entirely called that plot point in the air, one
you,
of many,
you did,
way
yeah.
before it happened.
Yeah. Jake offers to take Lindsay Lohan back to stay at one of his empty cabins at his lodge, and the hospital lets him.
Yeah.
Which is not, like, not to harp on, but in the movie Overboard, Kurt Russell's character goes to extreme lengths to make sure he is convincingly pretending to be her husband and gets to steal this heiress for revenge purposes.
Yeah.
Right? He's running a con. He knows a bit about her and, like, he says, she's got a birthmark.
Yeah,
and
birthmark
yeah,
that
yeah,
he's on her ass yeah. that he knows that she's got.
Yeah. Which is, because clearly, even 30-odd years ago, people were writing this going, well, they don't just let you take people out of a hospital, so we have to write a way around this. Didn't bother in this film. He's just like, I've got an empty cabin. Well, that seems fine. Take this patient immediately out of our hospital. And she's been there for, like, 3 hours, right? Because the timing on this gets weird, but I'll get
yes,
to
but
it.
The thing that you need to know about Jake, this main character here, is that he is a complete and utter fucking saint.
Oh, yeah.
It is incredible. He's walked on water to get across to this hospital.
Well, I mean, that's just ice. It's very cold.
Everyone loves him. Everyone in town knows him and has got a heartwarming story about the time that Jake went above and beyond to help them out.
It's people like that that have got a basement full of dead hookers. It's always people like that are up to something. Anyway, sadly not a plot point.
John Wayne Gacy was actually a pillar of the community.
Exactly, right? Did clowning
like,
at children's
like
parties.
Like the Rotary Club president
he's
not, or
he
something.
He keeps himself to himself. He's always polite. Anyway, Tad, the boyfriend, is alive, but he's lost in the wilderness. Lohan opens the curtains at what is a very nice chalet at this ski resort.
It's nicer than somewhere we could afford to stay.
Right. And she sees a CGI raccoon and does a pratfall to no avail.
She's going
to
fall over a lot now for the rest of the movie, which that's... no one is worried. Like, you know, you had that head injury and now you've become really clumsy all the time.
Also, she can't remember the number 7. It's not a... Jake comes to check on her and insults her outfit, which he's just given her because he's taken her home from the hospital. He's like, here's a load of clothes from the Lost and Found. And then 5 minutes later, he's like, oh, nice outfit. Like, you gave her that.
Now, I think that this might be the first in a long series of attempts to flirt, which does not land in any way, shape, or form.
I said, that is my next note. They have an awkward moment with less chemistry than an Amish bookshop. It's just, it's bad. Tad, brackets, how long has he been out there in the wilderness at this point?
I don't know.
He finds a cabin with an ice fisherman in it. Lohan bonds with Jake's adorable child, who reveals that her mum is dead too. They decide Lohanesiac's name should now be Sarah as a stopgap. Lohan tries to make breakfast and can't, but remembers that she doesn't eat bacon. The child convinces her to eat some bacon anyway, which is going to be awkward if her memory comes back and she's Jewish.
Right? I know! Both of us were like, it feels like you shouldn't force people to eat bacon.
Yeah, she can't remember who she is, but there might be a good reason for this.
Yeah, she seems really firm on this one fact about her identity.
The ice fishing guy, meanwhile, his truck is broken down, so he and Tad will have to hike out of the wilderness. How Tad has landed this far from the road when Lohan was right next to it and they fell off the same point in the mountain is beyond me, but anyway.
I don't worry. I mean, time and geography, there's actual magic in this movie.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. There's actual creepy Santa magic, so okay, fine. Lohan's doctor told her that doing normal things might bring her memory back, so Jake puts her to work in a montage of cleaning cliches.
Oh, guess what? She's not very good at it.
She's not very good at the cleaning stuff. Also, again, this is just the plot to Overboard, but without the charm or sense of humour.
Yep.
Having failed at cleaning, a dejected Lohan talks to a horse, and if we could just put that clip in a time machine to the set of Mean Girls, we might save Lohan a lot of pain and heartache. It might have scared her straight if we could just do that somehow. Jake and Lohan and Child go to the Christmas market, where Jake says the resort was in his... in his wife's family for 3 generations. What my note actually says is in his brackets Mexican wife's family for 3 generations, because the wife's mother still has a Mexican accent, but they've been in Colorado for 3 generations apparently. You know, all those Mexicans that run ski resorts famously in the mountains. Turns out Mexicans really are taking Americans' jobs. Who knew? That's a subtext of this. Like, it's baffling as how this. Yuck. Anyway.
Geography doesn't matter. Time doesn't matter.
Nothing matters
Sexual
in this world.
Chemistry doesn't matter. Nothing is the thing it is.
They go to the Christmas market. Jake says the resort has been in his wife's family for 3 generations, but he might have to sell up because he's just a simple folksy backwoods ski resort owner and you don't know nothing about any of this bookkeeping malarkey or... it's very confusing.
It will later turn out he basically never charges people to stay there.
Yeah, this is what
he's
for.
You know those people who go on skiing holidays and they're like, oh, I'm really struggling to make ends meet on this skiing holiday that
I'm just
on.
Go skiing on me, folks. It's fine.
Yeah, that's why his business is failing.
They meet Creepy Santa again and Lohan is enamoured of another snow globe, which Jake buys for her. Later, they try and fail to generate romantic tension as Lohan thanks him for everything.
They really don't belong together. I mean, if they were colleagues, I'd be like, oh, God, what's happened between these two?
Yeah.
They're in a fight.
Yeah, he's one of the blandest human
they
beings I've ever seen.
They probably don't want to be in the same room as each other.
Yeah, it's really bad. next day, Lohan is better at doing chores. They have another cliche montage. They make gingerbread and sing carols together. It looks like What Would Awake Me in Room 101. It's just, he gets the guitar out at some point so then them and the kid can sing folksy Christmas carols and they bake some gingerbread.
What
and
what's weird about this is these are absolute, I mean, this is why they're on the Christmas bingo, right? So the scene of making gingerbread as a heartwarming activity, decorating a gingerbread house, is an absolute classic staple, particularly of this type of Christmas movie. But it almost feels like they're trying to tick off our bingo card. They went through them so fast.
We need to check if anybody on this production downloaded that.
They seem to just be skipping through them in order to like tick them off. It's really weird.
Lohan finds the tree angel that Jake was looking at wistfully in his desk earlier on. He explains that it was his wife's and that he's going out to give toys to needy children. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, these plot events are not connected.
No, she goes with him. A sassy black lady at the toy drive turns up briefly to add some people of colour to this film, which it desperately needs.
Yeah.
She explains what a saint Jake is and then fucks off. That's her whole moment. It's oh God, Jake's fantastic. He's given to all the charities.
And exposition netter.
Yeah, that's
she's
her.
She's just there for exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then she
you know
sassies off. Yeah, God, it's bad.
Oh, that poor actor.
I know. Jake and Lohan nearly kiss Anderson Mistletoe but decide not to because it's not the end of the film yet.
Like, it's literally why. There's no reason for them to not kiss other than they're just like, yeah, oh, no, we better not. Apart from they seem to find each other repellent.
Yeah, that is the real reason, I think. Yeah. Next day, Lohan proposes holding a Christmas ball as a fundraiser for Jake's ski lodge. He confesses his feelings for her and admits that this confuses him as his dead wife is still dead from dying. They just can't, like, they're not even subtly hammering, they're hammering the dead wife gong loud enough that it's going to cause an avalanche. It's a real problem. Why his grandma advises him to get his cock wet is my next note there, which is basically
true.
Really, yeah. Oh, I think you should be with her.
No, you can't do an accent. Luke.
She's doing it.
Yeah,
I'm not convinced that's her actual speaking voice.
I don't think it is.
Lohan decides to leave, but then Jake has Lohan hang his dead deceased late wife's angel. Tad is still lost in the woods with an ice fisherman. Again, we're not sure how long this
actual
is taking.
Actual best bit of the whole film.
Yeah. Lohan's rich dad returns and realises his daughter is not just off on a secret ski trip, but is actually missing. Again, this is the plot of Overboard.
Exactly, the plot of Overboard.
Wise grandma buys Lohan a dress for the ball like the first Mrs. De Winter would have worn to the ball. It's gone very Rebecca, if that's a
apart
reference
from
to that.
If she was trying to get her laid.
Yeah.
She's like, please have sex with my son-in-law.
The first Mrs. De Winter was always horny this time of year.
Gets her a tight red dress.
Yeah, it's a weird beat, right?
Yeah, it's weird, yeah.
Yeah. Tad and his backwoodsmen are rescued by Lohan's dad and the police work out who she must be because the police had a missing woman they couldn't figure out.
Yeah.
It all starts to tie together. They all head off to Jake's.
Apparently she's famous enough in a minute to have a press conference about her disappearance. So the fact
that
nobody...
It hasn't been on
the
news at all up to the... Yeah.
I know, but she's in this universe.
Yeah.
She is quite famous.
No, that's what I mean. Like, she's famous enough that when she returns, it gets a press conference, but when
she
goes missing...
But she
goes
missing, no one notices.
Nobody
yeah, that's
yeah.
my point.
Yeah, okay. Jake and Lohan try out the dance floor ahead of the party but get interrupted by all the guests arriving. So
in one big enormous go.
Yeah. All the guests who are meant to be people who have stayed there over the years are local, which might explain why his business is failing, right? Because,
like,
you
want to get people, charge them.
You want to get people from out of town to come to your ski lodge, not the people that live next door to your ski lodge and can already go skiing because they fucking live there. Just a note. All the locals give Jake some money, and Jake's in the middle of giving a big speech to thank Lohan when her dad...
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life at this point, yeah. It's a Wonderful Overboard Life. Her boyfriend and her dad turn up. Lohan goes back to her pampered life, but now she makes her own bed and cooks, and this is just Overboard.
Overboard
stuff,
again.
Yeah. The adorable child tells Jake he should tell Lohan that he loves her, and that they can still tell her before she flies off to marry Tad, but they have to hurry. The roads are snowed in, and they try to take the snowmobile, but it's still broken. Magically, Santa's sleigh is suddenly outside their house, so they take that, pulled by the horse that Lohan was talking to earlier. Lohan breaks up with Tad, who then takes up with the male assistant.
Yeah.
This is such a weird plot. This needs a whole sidebar.
Like, it's totally fine if he's bisexual. It just isn't ever addressed...
No.
They just do it. And what is unclear is if it seems quite sexual, but
yeah,
they don't make it overtly sexual and they don't make it overtly not.
No. And are they trying to say because he takes Instagram selfies and he's sort of metrosexual, it's sort of implying that he must have been gay the whole time?
But maybe he is bisexual, which is completely
yeah.
fine. But then
yeah, it would be in an adult intelligent film for people who have brains, but this isn't that, right? So what are they trying to...
I don't
understand what they're doing.
I don't know.
Is it some sort of like... I don't know. I don't understand any of this. He's just like... He's like, oh, you know what, Lindsay Lohan, we should break up.
He's definitely positioned as like effete and feminine
yeah.
in contradiction to Jake,
yeah.
who is must
bland.
Be bland.
Just, he's got a big...
But he's not very masculine,
no.
really. He's not like...
He's got a big soft face. Very, very marshmallowy
pudgy.
Face. Yeah. Anyway, Jake and Lohan kiss, the end. And then we get some outtakes. Which
Which,
you know, like when you watch a Jackie Chan movie and you see him like failing at the stunts sometimes and like taking like a load of gun, like really hurting himself, and you appreciate how much love and attention is put into... This is not that. Also, those outtakes are sometimes funny. This is just people corpsing endlessly in this film that nobody gave a fuck
about.
They're
the most joyless outtakes
yeah.
I've ever seen. The point of including the outtakes is when, like, the actors have... Normally it's in a comedy where
yeah.
they've been riffing, they've made
yeah.
each other laugh.
They've had so much fun that it's like, it spills over.
It spills over
yeah.
and it's fun and it's like a lovely little, sweet at the end of a dinner
yeah.
of, like, how much fun they had making this film. Even the outtakes are quite awkward, most of them. Most of them are, like, quite standard. Someone's just, like, misses a line
oh,
or,
no,
like, slightly trips over and
yeah.
then, like, mugs for the camera.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Luke Hayes.
Thank you very much. Jesus, yeah. Don't watch this.
Okay. As is customary, I must find things I like about this
okay,
movie.
Okay, you do that. I'll drink from it.
Okay. I think the character, the guy who plays Tad, and that subplot with the ice fisherman, best parts of the whole movie.
That could have been funny.
They're trying really hard to make it funny, and the ice fisherman guy has got a bit of a Nick Offerman vibe.
Yeah.
He kind of is quite funny. Yeah. There's a bit in an outtake where he's obviously a good comedy actor. They are both interesting characters that I was pleased to see whenever we cut away to their subplot.
It's almost a separate movie. You could get a whole movie's worth of material out of this fish out of ice thing, I guess. Fish out of water, where this pampered Instagram star falls off a mountain and lands in a guy's ice cabin. Yeah.
And the Instagram star guy, he's turned up to 11, but I think he's supposed to be. I don't know what else you're supposed to do with those lines and that outfit.
Yeah.
So he is like, you know when an actor is fucking just going for it, and I appreciate him for that because this movie didn't.
He's
ask
committed
that
to
of
the
him.
Terrible material he's been given, and fair enough. Yeah.
He's shown up and he's really working his ass off, and I salute you for that, actor whose name I failed to look up.
Yeah, we don't like him that much. Jesus.
I mean, what is there to like about this film?
I know, much like that actor, you are working very hard at this, and I appreciate that.
What is difficult is I am a fan of this genre, right? Yeah. And this film is still a bad example of a genre of bad films.
Yeah.
So the point of these films is that they are, you can make bingo cards about them. They are completely riddled with cliche. They are ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, they often have magic in them. In the Princess Switch films, Vanessa Hudgens is playing two different characters, and then in the later film she starts playing more multiple the same character.
She's a nutty professoring at that point. She's clumping,
like a Christmas farce Orphan Black.
Yeah.
And it's fucking delightful. Like, the fact that they are so ludicrous and whimsical and it just nothing really matters and falls is part of the kind of bubblegummy appeal of the whole thing. So, you know, even... But I'm stuck with this movie about quite how bad it is. And I think a lot of it is to do with Lindsay Lohan, unfortunately. And I say that with a heavy heart because I like Lindsay Lohan as an actor.
Yeah, she has talent. It's not... Yeah.
So, and I don't think we've got the time or the necessary skills to unpack what has happened to Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's happened to her. She's clearly extremely troubled. She's had, you know, very public battles with substance abuse, but... Interestingly, she seems so she couldn't get work, famously. She went from being one of the sort of best Hollywood actresses, like very famous in the sort of 90s and 2000s. And, you know, Mean Girls was probably the height of her fame, right?
Yeah.
She's wonderful in that. She's not without talent. She can sing, which she also does in this movie to kind of prove she does.
Yeah.
And then she basically became blacklisted through her own behaviour.
She's almost sort of the last of a breed, right? Of the child star that implodes. Like, I think since then, working practices in TV and film seem to have gotten better to the point where, like, child stars aren't publicly having these breakdowns anymore, which is great. But she seems to be the last great example of that, right? Like, Macaulay Culkin obviously had a fucking hard go of it for a while. And didn't, you know, Gary Coleman was never okay. You know, like, she seems to be the end point of that, unfortunately, for her.
Yeah, I hope that that is, like, a cautionary tale and that we don't do this to people anymore.
Yeah.
She's clearly been unsupported for a long time. I feel like I keep giving her the benefit of the doubt, and like I've watched Lindsay Lohan. She had this like documentaries about her and stuff where she's trying to get back on, and she's desperate to work. She really wants to work, and she keeps kind of taking on these lower and lower budget projects because no one will have her, and she wants to prove herself. She wants to prove she will turn up.
It's
on
the
set,
picture that got smaller.
Yeah, and that she will do it, but she seems to be constantly in her own way. Even while sober, she seems a total fucking nightmare.
Yeah,
just riddled with anxiety, but she's also a diva. I think what I'm struggling to articulate is that it can be very very tricky to unpack. Where someone is being difficult because they have mental health problems, or they're being difficult because they're a bit of an asshole.
Yeah.
And I think she's somewhere in the middle.
It's that whole thing that, like, your mental health issues are not your fault, but they are your responsibility. Like, it's not your fault if you've got these, like, issues and trauma. You know, that's unfortunate and that's not on you, but managing them is up to you. You know, you can't then inflict them on other people. That's when you become the asshole.
Yeah, and I wonder with this film, I mean, I would guess that her co-star fucking hates her.
Yeah.
The way that they appear on screen. I mean, when they kiss, it's almost worth just watching that. They do not want to kiss. They do not want to be near each other. And I don't know, and we probably won't ever know, how she was on set. Was she a... did she turn it around? She's finished this movie, so she clearly turned up and did the work. But whether it was a absolute pain for everybody involved, interestingly, for this sort of level of film, they've got quite a large budget. They don't usually
It's Netflix. Netflix have deep pockets, famously. Well, that's what I was going to come to, because like, I wanted to talk about your experience doing this.
Yeah.
And about how, I've got a note here that like, there's this whole thing that like, especially as a straight white man in his 30s, it can be a bitter pill to swallow when you realise that, like, not all culture is for me these days. It used to be, you know. And now there are things that are not for me, and that's fine. But you said that, like, a lot of the limitations on these films are because it's not just not for me. It's not for Western audiences. Like, they're trying to sell these things internationally, but they're being sold to places like Saudi Arabia. So, like, the couple can't kiss until the end of the film because that's mildly scandalous still. I mean, if you just had people making out at the halfway point, it would be bordering on pornographic for that market, right? So, like, so there's all these limitations that, like, so it's not actually made for us, potentially. If it's a Netflix attempt to get... to sell this internationally off the back of a middling star these days.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of the handicaps here.
Yes, it is and it isn't. So I don't know the specifics of how this movie was made. And because it's
slapdash is the word that comes
and
to
Netflix
mind.
Do have very deep pockets. But however, I imagine this was probably made by a subsidiary company, or, you know, is going to have a budget. And I imagine that Lohan took quite a lot of that budget, you know, to be a name to put on this. So my experience is, so there are a lot of, I don't know how many of these companies there are, but there's more than one, and they churn out over 100 films a year. So they're making a romantic comedy
every
3 or 4 days. They're making an entire film, and the way that they're able to do it is that it is a total production line where everything is very, very tightly controlled. You are given a set, as a writer coming in, you're given a set of parameters which are incredibly strict, that like, for example, the heroine needs to be, or it needs to be a romantic comedy where the meet cute happened by page 10.
Yeah.
This happens. They don't kiss until the very, very end of the movie. There's absolutely no sex. There's no alcohol. No, like you say, because it's getting distributed to other places. I had a scene in mine which involved a bag being stolen.
Yeah.
And the hero was going to go and chase off the thief for the heroine and get the bag back as a moment.
Heroine as in female protagonist, as in a bag full of heroin, that's this. A different movie.
There has to be about a woman who is aged between 30, a white woman aged between 30 and 35, is straight couple, you know, it's... she's invariably going to be paired with a white man who's about the same age. It can't be set anywhere depressing, so...
Yeah, you weren't allowed to have the thief.
I couldn't have a thief. I had to cut out any of the drinking. I mean, they weren't like drinking. There was a point where they had a toast with champagne and I had to take that out. They couldn't, I'm trying to think of all the rules and regulations. And it's not just the rules and regulations about the plot. It's also about, although I did have a lesbian subplot in mine.
As long as they're, it's one of our bingo squares again, is gays aren't real people. Like you can have a gay character, but only if they're two-dimensional and backgrounded.
Well, I mean, I tried.
You tried, I know.
I tried to make them rounded. I mean, there just also isn't the space for that in the plot. I mean, the page count is very, very specific. I couldn't get paid unless my page count was between certain numbers. The scene count has to be between certain numbers. The locations, the number of speaking actors and non-speaking
actors. Yeah, you have to top trumps it, right? So you can have an extra location if you cut a role or vice versa.
So I wanted to have, I'm not going to disclose any details at all.
Yeah, and you wrote it under a pseudonym. Don't look for it, people. You're not
going to find this. I wanted to have one more expensive location. So I had to trade in 3 cheaper locations so I could have one more expensive location. At one point, I had to take out anybody who had an accent that wasn't, I mean, everyone's got an accent, but I couldn't specify. I'd given people all sorts of different accents to try and give some colour and life to the script.
Yeah.
And I had to have, everybody had to have a Northwest American accent.
Yeah.
They're going to be, you know, and they're filming in cheap, nondescript locations that they will be pretending are America. Yeah. So, I mean, you either know these films or you don't. So it does make it very, very difficult to do good work because you are extremely curtailed in your expression about what jokes you can have, how much character you can have, when you literally have to make sure that no one is from anywhere that isn't North America or has personality traits.
Interestingly, what this has reminded me of is Street Fighter the movie, right?
Right.
Where they were trying to get the movie made and they were having meetings with the Nintendo executives quite a lot, and they were trying to get a major action star to lead it, and Jean-Claude Van Damme was available. And they said, well, isn't his action accent going to be an issue? And the Japanese executive are like, what accent? Because they don't know, right? Yeah. So it's that whole thing that, like, it's not made for the Western market. It's made to sell globally as much as possible. They're not going to notice that Jean-Claude Van Damme doesn't sound American because it's subtitled or dubbed anyway, so it doesn't, you know. And because of that, like, people aren't going to notice that this isn't funny in English if it's being meant to be sold internationally, because...
No, I dispute that.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, I really do. I mean, so... What I'm trying to balance is that some of this is you are very, very limited in what you can do in order of making a good film. It is an incredibly strict palette that makes it very difficult to do original work. And what happened with me, and I don't know if this happens often or ever, is that I laboured over this script, trying to make it as good as I could, constantly changing parameters, normally within a very short amount, a very tight deadline to turn these changes around. And then a director came on board with... We're having this in inverted commas, alternative dialogue suggestions, which I was told were not suggestions.
They're not negotiable. Yeah.
So basically, a director came in and rewrote tons of my dialogue, I'm going to say incredibly badly, to the point where I then stepped away and said, you've got the file. If you're going to rewrite my script, just do it without, don't make me cut and paste your dialogue in.
Yeah.
So...
But this is what I mean. It doesn't matter, because I think these films are the equivalent of those Japanese shirts that you get that just say, like, unicorn hot dog good morning. And they just go, oh yeah, it's English words, so it's an English shirt. And people don't... And they're the film equivalent of that, right? This is a Western rom-com that we're watching.
Yes. Yeah, but they go all over the place. So they'll go to... So it'll be dubbed into French, dubbed into Spanish, dubbed into Italian, dubbed into Arabic, dubbed into stuff. I don't think you can say that those aren't discerning markets. It's bland because it's got to be not offensive to anyone in any way, shape or form. And they are also not supposed to be films that are really exciting or really harrowing or whatever. They are supposed to be very, very comfortable, very comfortable worlds. So that takes all the edges off. They're then made within very strict budget parameters. So then that means you maybe don't get the best writers and directors and stuff. And when you do, those people are not allowed to be given... They're not allowed to do their best work because they get all their edges taken off them and they have to make it for 20p in 10 minutes.
One of my notes here is that it's the genocide of humour. It's just they just go through it and stamp out every joke that they can, you know.
One of the problems with this movie, okay, so it is desperately unoriginal, but then is that a problem? These films aren't supposed to be original. I mean, I would argue that what would be good would be to work within the confines but try and find something new within those. So we're going to have a scene at a Christmas market, but can you not... I shouldn't be able to guess every beat of action and dialogue that's going to happen 5 minutes before it happens.
I've got a note here that says, these films aren't made to be good, but then people in the West start to like them ironically and they gain traction here and start getting more views. And then thick people start to like them unironically, so more get made, the world gets dumber, and it's like the creative equivalent of the human centipede, basically. That's my theory on these.
I'm going to push back on that.
Okay.
I think it is okay to have films that are really comforting. Yeah. I think that is completely fine, and not just fine, but also really important and valid. And Christmas can be... I find Christmas an incredibly difficult time.
Yeah.
For very serious reasons to do with, you know, people's families. Some people are alone. Some people are bereaved. All of that stuff is difficult, more difficult at Christmas than it is at any other time of year. And so having extremely comforting things to put on where you're not going to be confronted with anything difficult is really, really valuable. But they don't need to be bad. This is the thing. This is my thing. And I think that part of the problem... So if we go into the sort of technical problems with this film, it's very low on the ROM. It's very low on the COM.
Yeah.
The ROM is because I think the lead actors don't have any chemistry at all, but also those characters are so blandly written. It's like they've been terrified to give them any problems, apart from very, very noble problems of having a recently dead wife.
Yeah.
So Jake is a total saint.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any edge. Now, your classic rom-com hero is supposed to... The sparks that happen in a rom-com are because the two people clash against each other like flints.
Mr. Darcy is arrogant, right? That's the classic.
Yeah, Mr. Darcy is arrogant. He spars with her, with Elizabeth. That is where the sexual frisson comes from, is that they argue and they bicker and they wind each other up. And most classic rom-coms, when Harry met Sally, they spend the whole time fighting.
Yeah.
But what they've done is they've made Jake not have barely any of that at all. And like the one time he slightly has a fight with her, it's very justified and he apologises immediately.
And he doesn't actually shout at her, but she reacts like he's just told her to burn in hell, which is quite a weird...
Yeah, yeah. She screws up the washing machine, also by accident, because she accidentally, not even because she's a klutzy heroine or ditzy heiress, she totally by accident knocks the entire bottle of washing detergent into the dryer, into the washing machine. Obviously, it completely foams over.
And he says, oh, this is the last thing I need. And that's it. And then she acts like she sort of storms off like she's heartbroken.
Been slapped and heartbroken. And it's just, that's terrible as well. So he is completely dull and without any sort of edge. And then she is also very, very swiftly removed of any problematic behaviour. Mm. So they set her up that she's going to be Goldie Hawn in Overboard, right? That she's going to be spoiled and entitled and everything else. And instead, they just make her a little bit clueless and then desperately, innocently trying.
But also says, like almost her first lines, that she wants to try and make it on her own. So you set that, so then what's the... Yeah.
Exactly. So I've got here my note is the conflicts are such bullshit.
Yeah.
She isn't unpleasant.
They're making molehills out of mountains, effectively. Which is,
and I don't think that is necessarily the genre. Some of it is this type of rom-com lends itself to being very, very cozy. And so they try not to have too much conflict. But I wonder how much that's Lohan and as her star power, not wanting to be unpleasant because she has a reputation for being an incredibly difficult diva.
But surely,
I wonder if she won't play one.
But then the only way, when your career is as far down the toilet as hers is, surely the only way to recover it is to lean into your reputation and play off of it and play towards type.
Yeah, right?
And then play, you know, because then you can sort of explore your own archetype and you can do that sort of stunt casting thing. Look at Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler, right?
Yeah, where Nicolas Cage.
Like a sort of washed up lump meathead that is just kind of has ruined his own life. And you go, that's Mickey Rourke. And then you cast him as the same guy and then you lean into it and then he gets, then it works.
Exactly.
Right?
Or Lisa Kudrow in The Comeback.
As a fading sitcom star.
Who's desperately trying to stay relevant. Exactly. The film, either she isn't or the film isn't brave enough to do that. And what they do is then they completely miss the point because, one, when you show people behaving like really badly like that, normally audiences find that incredibly endearing. If you think about most of our favourite comedy stars, they behave really badly and that's why you enjoy them.
Everyone's favourite character on South Park is always Cartman, even though he's a fucking monster, right?
Of course it is. This also, the other thing this does is that it means that she doesn't get an arc.
Yeah.
So she doesn't transform from one state to another and she has a journey and we learn along with her, like Goldie Hawn does in Overboard and Kurt Russell does in Overboard.
Yeah.
And then you love them because they're flawed people who have learned and grown and changed. It doesn't do that either. So that makes it just a much less interesting journey to have as an audience because there's not really anything happening and she's a saint. And also, the point, I'm going to get up, I'm clambering onto my soapbox.
Go on, hang on. Strapping everybody.
What is wonderful about rom-coms is that people in a rom-com are really flawed and they behave really badly and they're very, very human. In fact, they often exhibit some of the worst behaviour. They're embarrassing and they are selfish or they are prideful or they are preoccupied or whatever it is. And the people that are opposite them, their leading man or lady, still falls in love with them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that they've seen all of that bad behaviour. In fact, they fall in love with them because of all of that bad behaviour, because they're human. And that is something really profound about people, because everybody, as at the end of Bridget Jones, wants to be loved just as they are.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to have to be perfect to be loved. And the essence and the beauty of the rom-com is that you are loved for who you are, with all of your faults, not despite them.
This has been a rom-com political broadcast from B. Roberts.
And that is why rom-coms are powerful and moving. Yeah. And ones like Bridget Jones or Four Weddings do stay with us.
Mm.
And so you can't take people's fucking flaws out of rom-coms because it undermines everything. Her only flaws here is that she falls over a lot.
Yeah.
And his is that he's not quite ready to bone after his wife died 2 years ago.
Yeah. It's kind of the equivalent of, for want of a better word, male cinema, of like Steven Seagal movies, where like Steven Seagal doesn't even ever get punched in a fight scene because he's too good at fighting. He's like, this is just fucking boring to watch them. There's no point. There's no danger. There's no peril in this. Why am I bothering? You know, it's the same thing.
Exactly. And it's why Jackie Chan is such a fucking delight to watch, because he seems to get visibly injured.
Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
And he's funny, and he's scrambling all the time. He's an underdog. He's constantly trying to, he's like, oh, they've done this thing. Ah! And then he panics and he gets injured, and then he comes up with a way to overcome and to adapt. And so you get a journey.
Yeah. You need something for the audience to root for. And there's nothing in this.
And this movie, it's worse than the ones where they change places by accidentally touching a bauble. It's worse where she has to hand deliver at the Christmas post, which I've seen like 3 times, which is not a good movie. It's about having to deliver a letter.
Yeah.
Like, this movie is a bad one out of a bad genre.
Yeah, my fix just says in capitals, put jokes in it. Because there are the setups, everything in this, and again, whether it's the speed that they make this kind of film at, everything in this feels like a first pass. Like,
I mean, the coffee spill meet cute.
Yeah, oh God, yeah.
I mean, I got told off for doing that. Yeah. I was like, oh, I don't know, they meet into each other by bumping coffee. And the guy I was working with was like, you know, that's like a thousand. Yeah. Every single fucking rom-com has them doing that.
Everything just feels like they went through the script going, we'll put the jokes in on a second pass, and they just didn't do one, right? Like, oh, we'll put something funny here, you know, like a coffee spill, but better. Yeah, we'll get it in. We'll get it later. And they didn't, right? Like the whole ice fishing thing, that works great. Like, that's, like I said, it's nearly a movie in and of itself. That's potentially a funny idea, right?
Yeah. You've either got to commit to doing Overboard.
Yeah.
You're either doing the movie Overboard, which don't bother doing the movie Overboard.
It's been done twice.
It's been done twice. It was better the first time.
Yeah.
But just go hard on that. She has to be spoiled and prissy and uptight, and he has to be annoyed at her and salt at the earth, and she has to learn.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't do that. Or you've got to steer away and just do something fucking interesting.
Well, I did have a completely unrelated idea while I was writing up my notes on this, which is a woman has a rom-com romance and an adorable child, but then she slowly starts to fear that she is the wife that's going to be dead for this guy's next romance, and she realises she's going to be the dead mother in an upcoming movie, and
it slowly
becomes a horror film. Yeah, that's my idea. But that's totally unrelated. That was the thought that I had that I think works as a...
Yeah. I mean, in terms of fixes, you need a different romantic lead, because, I mean, I don't mind keeping Lohan, but you've got to have someone she has chemistry with, and she has absolutely no chemistry with this guy at all.
I don't know what his name is, Jimmy Argon or something. He just doesn't react with anything.
He doesn't react with anything, but I mean, that is kind of how it's written, and he's trying with what he's got, but it just doesn't work, and it seems that he palpably hates being anywhere near her.
Maybe
Lohan is over for a while and she just needs to come back with much, much better material. She's trying.
She is trying
with this material, and I don't know if she's had a hand in making this character so completely bland.
She doesn't, like, not to be objectivist or not to objectify somebody, I'm not being Ayn Rand, not to objectify her, but she doesn't look great.
She
looks a little bit haggard. She is potentially a fantastic Blanche DuBois at this point in her career, or we could do Sunset Boulevard, something in that area as a fading starlet is prime territory for her. She could do, you know.
And you know what? I think if you gave her a character that lent into that persona, like you were saying, and you gave her good material, Lindsay Lohan can deliver good material. She's a funny, funny actor. Yeah. She's got a great singing voice. She can deliver heart. She does have all of that stuff within her.
Yeah.
So I think if you gave her a great script, she could really do it.
Yeah.
Maybe she could. I don't know. It's impossible to tell from this movie, because this movie is so badly written.
Yeah.
But then also, it's a tricky one, because these movies are made to a very, very difficult formula. It's hard to work within these incredibly tight parameters and deliver something that is exciting or good or original.
I think the lesson, as it so often is that it's capitalism's fault. It's not Lindsay Lohan's fault. It's not even the writer's fault. It's capitalism's fault.
But I tell you who knocks these fucking out of the parks. Vanessa Hudgens, she's an absolute delight in everything that she is in. She is the queen of these. And don't worry, Hudgens, because Lohan's not coming for your crown.
Yeah. I'll take your word for that, but okay. Right, we are back properly now. So, we don't know what we're doing next, but it's Christmas season. We're going to be doing something festive.
If you are reading The Shining, continue to read The Shining. I'm going to start reading The Shining again. I promise I'm going to get through it.
Keep reading The Shining. Just keep shining.
We will do.
And we all shine on.
Maybe as a New Year thing, we will do a Christmas, our Shining book club, Masters in Disasters, where we're going to be comparing the book to the movie. Yeah. So if you fancy something that is not festive, or if you feel like killing your loved ones at this time of year, I do urge you to read The Shining.
If you want to contact us, you can do it artsoulpodcast@gmail.com.
We're currently still on Twitter as it limps along.
Twitter is still on, yeah. And, Elon's getting booed en masse, which I'm thoroughly enjoying.
It's at artsoulpod.
Yep. We have a Patreon out there in the wild. You know, Patreon.
Blow all the dust off it. It was so Patreon.com/theartsoul.
Yeah, I think that's about it, isn't it?
I think that's about it.
Okay, we're back and we will see you in a week, give or take. Oh dear, Lindsay Lohan.